Chof Shvat, Wednesday, the 6th of February, Rabbi Joseph Perlman, chapter and verse, part 7.
Right, good morning, gentlemen. We're continuing chapter and verse. So far, we've dealt with the letters, we've dealt with the words, we've dealt with psukim, and we dealt with the sedras, and last time we dealt with prokim and sedorim. If you remember, that's chapters, which is the prokim being the kapitlach, the non-Jewish divisions, and the sedorim being the Jewish divisions, which is something different from psuchos and stumos, but there is a system. We dealt with the kuf nun dalet, 154, and we dealt with 175. Now that's where we're up to. All these are interconnected, and we still have from the original sheet, which I have some spare copies of those too, if anybody wants them, from the previous lot, if you wanted, anybody wants to just bring themselves up to date with those. What I've done from that previous sheet, which was in very Pekitsu, I've produced numbers 5, 6, and 6 in the present sheet in a much more elaborate form, but not a letter, but it's got more of the Mara Mekomos, etc. And if you recollect, we were in the middle of part 5 of that particular page. There are some more, if anybody wants more. I've got a few more of the old ones. Anybody else want to have a look at the old ones? I've got a few more if they want. And at the top of this new page that you've got, I've actually set out the Yerushalmi, which I mentioned last time, which I didn't actually mention inside. For those who want to follow it up, you can see very, very clearly it's actually not just some modern gematria, it's actually a Yerushalmi. I'll read it out. Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Ano min yoimi lo istaklis b'safo da'agadita. As I never looked at the form of Agoda, I'm normally busy with halacha, said Rabbi Yosef. I'm not, Agoda is not quite my field. But he said, Achadzman, once upon a time, istakilis, I did have a look. I came across an Agoda. Ashkach is Kosovo, and I found in that particular Sefer of Agoda, Meo v'shivim v'chamesh parshas, Shekosovo toiro, Dovar Amiro, Tzivui, Keneged Shnoisov Shel Avraham Ovinu. Dichsev le, and it brings a posuk. It brings a posuk what this actually means is a bit complicated. It was not for us now as to whether he meant it's got Daber, Amiro, and Sivoy in 175 places. It doesn't quite work out in the normal way that the Mephoshim are all explaining what the Rishonim is really getting at. But for our purposes, the point of this Rishonim is that it is 175 parshias. And it's Kineged the age of Avraham Avinu. That's the interesting point for us. There seems to be some point in connecting things with the age of a person. And then it goes on to say, Me'a arboim v'sheva mizmoiros shekosov b'tehillim. There were 147 mizmoirim in Tehillim. We did discuss that last time. That was one of the things we did discuss, whether there were 150 chapters or 147 chapters. But from the Rishonim, it's clear there were 147 chapters, Keneged the age of Yaakov Avinu. So therefore, there's a connection between Yaakov and Tehillim. And finally, it goes on to say, Me'o Esim v'sholosh piyomim sheYisrael onim haleluko. If you go through the halelukos of Tehillim, you'll find there are 123 keneged shnoisov shel Aaron. And the Rishonim actually goes on to explain what Aaron's connection is, particularly to Tehillim. He was Oyev Shalom, etc. And that's also part of the idea of Tehillim. But what we're seeing is that the age of a person has a relevance to the Sefer, and the number has a particular significance. Now, I've then referred to the Ale Tamar, who is a modern sefer, who's a dayan in Tel Aviv, a big posik lehalocha, and he brought out a sefer on one of the most beautiful sforim on the Yerushalmi, and he adds, from here we can learn a halocha, lehalocha lemaisa, it's a good thing to actually create a sefer with the same number of chapters as a person's age. He goes, actually says, it's not just a chassidish maaser, it's something from the Roshami, which is a good thing to do. And he goes on to talk about the minig, the word people often gave tzedakah, they gave the tzedakah according to their age. So the older the person was, the more tzedakah he would give. Didn't say which currency he gave it in, of course, but maybe he gave it in shkolim. But the point was, there was an Indian, a sort of a pidyon nefesh, so to speak. If you are 54 years old, you give 54 pence or $54 or £54, noch besser, then you are, there's an Indian in doing that. Exactly what the Indian is can't tell you, but there's definitely a significance in numerology. That I can tell you. And when we're talking about chapter and verse, it's not just chapters and verses and letters and then it's a complete combination. Now, as we are always nice to say something from the Seder, I want to say something in the name of Rabbi Solomon Sassoon Zichrono Livrocha, who was a big thinker and a very, very original mind. And this is something my late father, Oliver Sholem, was very, very taken with, the following idea. He had the idea that every parsha in the Torah has a connection with its numerology as well. It's interconnected. We know that the Torah is divine, but not only do the psukim tell you messages from what's there, and etc., and what's not there. We're going to come to that in perhaps the next issue as to what you can learn from what's not there, from what's missing. But at the moment we're looking at what is there, and if you have a look at a chapter, very often we've already discussed that the number 7, you'll find in many chapters, that the central feature of what it's talking about will occur 7 times. You'll find in the parsha, and that often gives you a clue as to what's the main point of this particular parsha. If you see the point mentioned 7 times, that's a good remez, that is the ikka and akuda in that particular parsha. Now, in the parsha, in the beginning of Mishpatim, Rabbi Sassoon calculated that there are 76 words and 282 letters. Does that mean anything to anybody? The first 76 words in the first parsha of Mishpatim, and there are 282 letters. I counted them afterwards and I checked and it worked. Anybody see the significance of that?
282.
What's 76? What is the first parasha talking about in Mishpatim? It's talking about the Eved Ivri. Eved is 76 words. Ivri is 282 letters. It's remarkable. Is that an accident, a mikre ba'alma? I don't think so. The likelihood of statistically of that happening just by accident is beyond belief. And Rabbi Sassoon therefore said that every parsha in the Torah, if you look carefully at it, you will find some remez to it. He didn't go through every parsha, and I don't know how you would do it. But it's clear that there is something in the parshas beyond what hits you in the open begoli. There's hidden parts. And if you look at the second parsha, what would you tell me that the second parsha is talking about in the main concept of the second parsha of Mishpatim? It's talking about the Omer Ha'evriya. Well, you count up the words. The words are exactly the same as Ha'omer. That is the number of words we'll give you Ha'omer. Now, okay, you can say it's gematrias, etc. I appreciate that one's got to be very careful. But nonetheless, when you get a really good gematria, which fits in absolutely to the point, it therefore means that there must be something to it. Right, so that's just something from this week's Seder to show you that when you lay in the parashas, there's far more behind it, far more to just the chapter and the verse. There's much more in it than actually meets the eye at first sight. That's where we got to last time, and we were just mentioning that it's also a minhag, very often, that the mechaber puts his name somewhere in what he writes. That's where we were up to. And if you remember, we talked about the Rambam dividing all his Sforim into 14 sections. The Rambam in the Mishneh Torah, he's got 14 different sections, and there didn't seem to be any particular reason why there should be 14, because Mishpatim and Shoftim could have been put together, Korbanos and Avodah didn't need to be separate, and similar in his Shiroshim, in his Hakdama to the Yad, he has actually 14 Shiroshim, and it's very difficult to find out why some of them are divided into two that could have easily been incorporated. And the answer was that he wanted to be Mazkir his brother David. Well, we discussed that on the last occasion. David was his brother who looked after him and did the Yisachar and Zevulun with him, and Rambam was very, very upset when David's ship went down and he passed away, and that's why he called his sefer the Yad. Yad HaChazaka, Yad being the same idea. That's where we got up to last time. I want to just add on that there are, in Tanakh, believe it or not, you find the same phenomenon in different places. So, for example, there's a whole diun as to whether Koheles was written by Shlomo or another person. Koheles is not his normal name. He had various names, like Moshe had various names. Shlomo is also known as Ogre Ben Yeka. He's called Yedidio. He's got various different names. But how can we prove that Shlomo was in fact Koheles? It says, Divrei Koheles Ben David. How do you know it was him? Maybe it was somebody else. Chazal tell us. That's good enough for us. However, I can prove it to you much more clearly. If you take the last four words, Im Tov Imro, at Gematria Shlomo. In other words, he signed his name at the end of the Sefer. Now, all these people who make Dion and Chazal didn't get it right, and Chazal didn't know what they were talking about, and they just made it up. You can see he signed his name at the end. And once you've done that, that for me is final proof. Even though, I mean, obviously we don't need to have final proof, Chazal tells us he was that. But even if you want to be misvakert and say that the Chazal were saying Hagod and it wasn't true, you've got to sign his name in the end of the Sefer. Similarly, who wrote Eicha? Well, we know Chazal tell us Eicha was the Sefer which Yirmiyahu dictated to his scribe Baruch Ben Neriah, the whole mice are there. But how do we know it was Yirmiyah? Well, that's very simple. If you take Ani Agever, which was the final chapter, which sort of finalized the Eicha, that is also Gematria Yirmiyahu. So we know, it is there, the names are there. What I'm saying is that it was a minig already at the time of the Tanakh to make a remez to the Sefer. And that's why the Paitonim, you find, do write their name in an acrostic. You find the Ibn Ezra, for example, Ekieshmon or Shabbos, written by the Ibn Ezra, has his name in the acrostic. We know that the Arizal, he wrote the Yom Zel Yisrael. We know the Rabbi Yisrael Najara, who wrote Koribon, Rabbi Shlomo Alkabitz, who wrote the Lechor Dodi. All their names are in an acrostic at the beginning, so you know exactly who. They don't say write their names out Mephorish, I'm the author of this, but they are put their seal on the particular piyut, and the Paiton, the Kaliyah, does it all the time. There is in fact a fascinating machlokus between the Shema Gedolim, that's the Chidor, and the Ponim Meiros, as to whether when a Mechaber writes a Sefer, it's a good thing to put his name on it or not. The Ponim Meiros says he doesn't need to put his name on it at all. If a person is worried about being a Baal Gaiva and he doesn't want people to write the Sefer so everybody should be talking about him, he can leave his name out. And his shitta is that if you quote that sefer is then quoted, even if you don't quote the name of the mechaber, when the Gemara says sif sosov dovos bakever, that the mouth will be speaking in the grave and the name will be perpetuated, it'll be done automatically without mentioning the person's name. So if I say something over in somebody's name from a sefer and I don't mention the name of the mechaber, according to the Ponimiris that works. It's perfectly okay, and you get all the schuz, you don't need to put your name. Most of the poskim disagree with that, and they say that it's better for the mechaber to put their name on. The Shemaitim says you should put your name on a sefer, don't worry about gaiva, it's not gaiva if you do it in the right way, and it's important that people should identify who is the mechaber. And he goes further as well, if you look into the whole subject, I haven't put the reference on the sheet in front, but if you want the reference, for those who want to jot it down, you'll find it in the Shema Gedolim of the Chidor, Ma'areches Sforim Os Zayin Simon Chov Vov, Erech Sefer Hazichroinos. I repeat that. Shema Gedolim Lechidor, Ma'areches Sforim Os Zayin Simon Chov Vov, Erech Sefer HaZichronos, when he disagrees with the Ponemiris and he holds that you should put your name on things. And he said, in particular, if it's a halachic sefer, you've got to put your name on it, because otherwise, how do I know who I'm disagreeing with? I mean, it's a big difference if, you know, if Mr. Bloggs or Mr. Smith writes a sefer, or if Chaim Kanievsky writes a sefer. You can't disagree with one, but the other two you can probably disagree with quite happily. So you need to know the authenticity of the person who's, if it's halacha. However, if it's a sefer Musa, there's a bigger hetzer, because Musa, in any case, is just to be ma'oreh. It doesn't matter who writes the Musa, it's the Musa itself which matters, and therefore they do distinguish between those things. Let me tell you a very, very interesting ma'aseh which you may have heard before. There's one piyut which we've got, which does not have an acrostic on it. And that's a very, very popular piyut, which many people say Friday night, many people say Shalosh Shudas. It's often said, and that's the Yedid Nefesh. The acrostic for Yedid Nefesh is? Yud Kei Vovke, thank you. Not the name of the Mechaba. Do you know the name of the Mechaba? Why not? You do know it, do you? No, that's not the Mechaba. But why is the Mechaba not mentioned? Do you know who the Mechaba was? Anybody know who the Mechaba was? See, nobody knows. It's kept secret because it hasn't got his name on it. Everybody knows the Kieshma is Ibn Ezra. Everybody knows that the Chor Dodi is Rabbi Shlomo Alkabitz. Most people know that Koribon is Rabbi Shlomo Najara. But because their names are there, their first name, we know. But very, very few people know who wrote Yedid Nefesh. Let me tell you the story, how it went. Once upon a time, in Tzfas, at the time of the Arizal, there was a shamash. Now, in the olden days, and where I come from, the shamash was a person who you kicked around. He wasn't like a gabbai. A gabbai is a b'chosh of an Indian. You know, he's in charge. A shamash was a fellow who got the blame for everything, was always told to do things, and a shamash, unfortunately, in fact, in the time of the Gemara, is called the Chazan HaKnesses. Nowadays, we've divided the function of the chazan from the shamash. The chazan is the chosh of a place, he says and sings, etc. And the shamash gets kicked about for whatever he does. Whatever he does is wrong. He's always the fall guy. Now, the shamash in this particular shul of the Arizal was a gentleman by the name of Reb Elozer Azkari. Reb Elozer Azkari. That was his name. Now, he was a shamash, and people kicked him around, and he was happy, didn't complain, just did his job. When everybody went to bed, he stayed behind, so everybody thought he stayed behind to tidy up and to clear up all the mess that everybody else had left. After all, that's the job, he's a shmata, he's got to deal with it. But it wasn't what he was doing. What he was doing was writing Swam. He wrote the Sefer Charedim. Do you know the Sefer Charedim? That's a terrific Sefer. A Sefer which is a standard Sefer of very high quality. Anyhow, it seems that every night, late at night, until he fell asleep over his Sforim in the morning, he was busy writing his Sforim. One day, the Arizal popped into the Beis HaMedrash for some reason in the middle of the night, and he saw Reb Elozer Azkari, dropped off over the Sefer. And he saw the writings around. And he looked at the writings and he saw, this is fantastic. This is nothing. He must have written this. And Arizal, being a very sharp person, realized what was going on. He realized that Reb Elozer Azkari was a tremendous godel, but he didn't want anybody to know, and he preferred to get kicked around as if he was a shmata, so they should not have any godless in his Torah. And that's the explanation, that when Reb Elozer Azkari wrote Yedid Nefesh, he wouldn't put his name on it. He didn't want anybody to know. I love Hashem, ki choylas ahava oni. I love Hashem. And therefore, he wrote his piyut, which is the most beautiful piyut. He wrote it with Hashem's name on it. It was his love for Hashem. And he didn't show his name at all. That's the reason how Yedid Nefesh came about. But in order to do that, you've got to be at the Madrega of Reb Elozer Azkari. For the most of us, if you write a sefer, put your name on it. Not only on the Shablat you can put it, you can actually put your name either in a gematria or in the first letters or at the end, as we've said. There's an Indian in doing it. Rashi? Well, everybody knows who Rashi is. Yeah. It's not so simple. You say that. Rashi starts off Omar Rabbi Yitzchok. Yitzchok was his father. So he's telling everybody, my daddy is the Yitzchok. So everyone knows Rashi Shlomo ben Yitzchok. So it is the art of the Ramazim in Rashi, which we're let's leave for the time being, because we've only got a short time to do this. But Rashi is also full of Kedusha. Now, I'm not saying you have to do it, and as we said before, Rabbi Elazar Zakaria decided he didn't want to do it. Maybe Rashi also felt the same, that it wasn't necessary. But anyhow, what I'm trying to say is that there is an inyan, not only in what is in the Sefer, but also the signature of the Sefer and so forth. Now let's move on now to what we started off about, the significance of the number in of the words, letters and psukim. Every single number has not only a gematria, I'm not talking about gematrias now, apart from its gematria, it also has an innate significance. And in the sheets which I've given you around on the back, I've actually gone from 1 to 10, showing what each number signifies. And that's quite important, because if you have a parasha with a certain number of items, or a certain number of words or letters, that can give you messages from the number within the parasha. As we've just seen, Eved and Ivy, that's not number significance, that's gematria significance. But nonetheless, every number has it. Now, I haven't seen this anywhere, but I went through the Aseres HaDibros, and I found that each one of the Dibras actually represents what the number stands for. It's all done on the back of that sheet. And just to take an example, one is obviously the Anochi Hashem, that's unity. Two represents this world, therefore don't worship idols, that's the second one. Three always represents Chizuk. Now, no, Shalsheles, Chazok is three times. Therefore, how do you prove that that something is true? You swear. Don't swear falsely. That's the shabbat. That's the thing. Shabbos is four because that's the centrality of the week. Shabbos was created, I know it's on the seventh day, but it's the pivotal part of the week, and that's why there's 3 days before Shabbos and 3 days after Shabbos. They're all interconnected halachically. 3 days before, you're not allowed to go on a journey for the Shem Mitzvah. 3 days afterwards, you can say Havdalah. And Shabbos is the sort of center, because four represents the Shleimus Habriah, the Shleimus. There are a lot of proofs, and I mentioned some there. And so on and so forth. A nice interesting one is number nine. Nine, we know, is the mid of MS. Aleph, Mem, Tov comes to nine. Nine is the number which never disappears. Any number which is divisible by nine will add up to nine. We know that number nine is the mid number of MS. Therefore, Losana, don't tell lies. So every one of the Dibras can be associated with the particular one. Another very simple one, number seven, which represents Kedusha, where Rashi tells us quite clearly in Kedoshim that wherever the Kedusha is the opposite of Arayas, so Losinov. So what I'm saying is each number gives its significance. Now, apart from those numbers on the back, there's 11 and 12 are also on the back of that sheet. I've now, in the new one, added a few more and pointed out the significance. Let's just have a look at one or two places in the Torah. The Targum Yonason, at the beginning of Hazinu, points out specifically that when Moshe Rabbeinu started his Shira HaHazinu, he was very careful about the number of words he used before he came to the Shem Hashem. With Hazinu Hashemam, Vadaberes Yishma, Asim Refi, Yarev Gabot, Yitzhak, Atal, Imrasik, Yivzik, Yirim, Yavetik, Yirim, Yavetik, Ki Shem Hashem Ekro. Says the Targum Yonason, the shame of Hashem comes after 85 letters and after 21 words. What's the significance of that? Well, 85 has a special significance, and 21 and 22 has special significance. Let's just quickly look at 85. 85 is the number of finality. I can prove it to you. How many letters have to be left in a Sefer Torah before you're allowed to go and save it min adlikah on Shabbos?
You know,
85. Kemenyan va'ibin sa. So Binyam says, according to the one sheet in the Gemara, there are seven Sifrei Torah. That means Bereshis Shemois Vayikra, Bamidbar is divided into three, and then you've got Devorim. That makes you seven. But the division is up to Vayibin Sarah and after Vayibin Sarah. But Vayibin Sarah is the safer pronounced for how many letters? 85 letters. So the Mishnah tells us in your Yodayim that 85 letters is the minimum for enabling this sefer to retain its Kedusha so that you might sell him in Adlikah. That's the Mishnah of Fureshes, 85. But you find 85 elsewhere. Which is the smallest sefer in Tanakh? The Chof Dalet Sforim. Which one? No, Ovadia is not a sefer. Ovadia is only a chelek of Treyasar. It's a not a sefer mivnatzma. It's true, the non-Jews will try to call that one. It's only one chapter. But it's not. As far as we're concerned, it's not part of the Chof Dalet. It is one chelik of one of the Chof Dalet. And there are 24 svarim in Tanakh. Treos is the final sefer of Nevi'im. It's not divided into 12 svarim. So that's not right. Which is the smallest sefer in Tanakh? Yehoshua?
No.
What? Shira Shirim has got 117 psukim. Right? It's not the shortest. It's Rus, Megillas Rus. How many psukim in Megillas Rus? Guess. 85. That's exactly it. The smallest sefer in Tanakh has 85 psukim. Is that a mikra ba'alma? Or is it part of this significance that for some reason or other, the number 85 is the smallest group that you can have when you produce a sefer? It's clearly connected. Must be. If you want to remember, it's Gematria Boaz with a Vav. And if you, the way to remember it is that Boaz is normally spelled without a Vav. But for the purposes of remembering the Sefer, it's Boaz. And it's also well known that Boaz, eight times you have Psukim which don't begin with Vav. And the other 77 Psukim begin with the letter Vav. So you've got, that's how you get to your 85. And there's a significance in the bow as well. The eight psukim which don't begin with other letters, actually come to the name of the Shlo HaKodesh. In other words, they say the Shlo HaKodesh was a Gilgul from Boaz, and you can see it from the actual psukim of the Megillah. There's a remarkable amount of hidden learning in any sefer. We can't do everything. I only know a tip of many myself, but usually that tip was a little bit more than many other people are aware of. And it's good to learn these things because you see the depth which goes into it. So now, that's 85. 21 leads to 22. Chof Aleph, of course, is a famous number. It's the number of the Shem of Moshe Rabbeinu heard at Har Sinai, we'd call the Eyeh Asher Eyeh. That's the Shem of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the first and last letters of the Aseres HaDibros, which starts with Anoch Hashem and finishes off with Re'acho, that's Ach. And there's a lot of different significances in that number. And also 22 is a very famous number because it has all the letters of the Osius in the alphabet. So therefore Moshe Rabbeinu decided, I'm not going to have the Ha'oza and the Chutzpah to mention Hashem's name until I've already said 21 other words. So Hashem will then have the Kedusha of becoming the 22nd. And assuming it'll be 85 letters beforehand. Now, here again, I go on my Ashkenazi hobby horse, that only in Nusach Ashkenaz, not in Nusach Sfard, you will find that every single Kedusha, which we say, every single Kedusha, is always, says Hashem's name, Kodesh Kodesh Hashem, is always the 22nd word. You might not be aware of that, but every Kedusha, whether it's Naritzcho, whether it is Nekadesh, whether it's Yom Kippur, whether it's Shabbos, whether it's weekday, you will find that we do not mention Hashem's name until we said 21 other words, and then the 22nd word is the name of Hashem. And that follows the Targum Yonason, that it's a chutzpah and a ha'ozah to mention Hashem's name, unless you've had 21 words introduction first. It doesn't work for Nusach Sfarad. It won't work. Right? Because we are much more attuned to numerology than they are. There's nothing wrong, they have a different nusach, but we replicate these ideas which come from numerology in the Nusach Ashkenaz. There are other examples of this. If you're just going down my list, 15, everybody knows, is the number which represents Simcha, and that's why it does, there's a reason for that too, because it's 3 times 5, it's in the center of the month, and 15, you have Pesach is the 15th, Sukkot is the 15th, Shushan Purim is the 15th, where the Ikar Nenes took place, Tu B'Av, Tu B'Shvat. The 15th of the month is the high point of the month, and it represents Simcha. Therefore, we say 15 Shvachim in Yishtabach, We say 15 Boruchs and Boruch Sh'oma. We don't have this Nusach. We have 13 in our Nusach Ashkenaz, and we have 13 Shvachim in Yishtabach. But there is a Nusach, and I saw it in Bevis Mark Shul once upon a time, the only place I've actually seen it, that the Portuguese Nusach of 15 Boruchs in Boruch Sh'oma, which fits in with the Baal HaTurim, which says that as well, the 15 Boruchs and 15 Shvachim. However, in the Chasima of Yishtabach, which we say, in Nusach Ashkenaz there are 15 words, but not in Nusach Sfarad. Because they had in Yochid, they had Rebbeinu, they have a different Nusach. We have 15 words there. And it comes from a famous Medrash, which says that Moshe Rabbeinu, this is next week, said to Parshas Truma, he lost count of where the silver had gone. And he was in a terrible state, poor old Moshe Rabbeinu, because people were accusing him of theft. You know, he'd stolen the silver. He'd walked off with the silver there. They said that he'd made it up himself to it. Well, all of a sudden, he opened a drawer, and 15 vovin fell out. Oh, says Moshe, I now remember where the rest of the silver was. Most of it was in the Adonim, I forgot. The silver was in the cloim, and the cloim were all covered over. The curtains and they were covered over so you couldn't see them. So he'd forgotten that they were there, they were hidden. And now he remembered that from all the silver vovin that he made, there were 15 left over. And when he saw that, oh, she said, I'm so, so happy that I've been vindicated. I can now prove that I didn't steal any of the silver. He got so excited about it that he composed 15 vovin, which we say every day after Krishna, and we're supposed to say with joy, with simcha, because that represents what Moshe Rabbeinu originally found. As we state in the Baal HaTosfos and in the Midrashim. So we're seeing that the 15 vovin represent the high point of simcha. So the number 15 will occur in those places. There's a remes to the 15 vovim in the Pasuk in Vayakel. It's actually written down here somewhere, I think, where it says, V'hamlocha hoiso dayom. If you take the Rosh Yitevis, V'hamlocha hoiso dayom. Again, it's a gematria, gives you 15, which tells us that there were 15 vov actually left over. What's that? 15 shulamal, that's quite right, 15 steps, 15 words in Birchas Koyanim, which is again a great, that we only say b'zman ha-simcha, and that's why there are mostly we don't say in Chutz La'aretz. I think I'm running out of time now, so I'll just finish off. Yes, there's going to be a bit of part eight. I just finished it with one thing on the 15. You're right, the Rabbi Nabachi tells you lots of examples of where you have the significance of this number 15. But I'm going to tell you one which nobody's ever heard of before. And that is, at the beginning of Maseches Yevamos, it tells us, Chamesh Esrei Noshim Potras Torah Sim Torah Sim. 15 women patter their Torahs. And they don't have any Yibum. And the Gemara tells us why minyan aliyasu yamai, the minyan is to cut out Tzoros Islandis or Tzoros Soita, or whatever it is. But why 15? What's the significance of the number? Nobody talks about that. But I think the answer is very simple as this. The Gemara tells us in Gittin that people used to give a get to their wives so that they shouldn't have to fall before the oven. They were very upset that the wife had to go to the oven. It wasn't very pleasant. If they didn't fall to the oven, they had children, or they had a gerush, and they were besimcha. That's why it says 15. There are 15 women who their tzoros are extremely happy about because they don't have to go to Yibum. Right.